has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Malka
has joined.
Good afternoon.
Okay. We will begin with Alicia and Yehud. Lashani food could jabber to ish day, beat hilu, urkimu, utkilu, utkilu, urkimu. Leakta, Lashem, yudhe, bavate. The Yehuda, Shilim, Bashem, Kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah, La sok Torah mitzvah. Vaihino amadunai lohino alena maseya deno kanane alena maseya deno kananehu. We are reading from the basic evolution of God and evolution of Hashem, written by Rabbi Bar Sadak in this class number 2. And we are starting still in the introduction in page 14. And I'm going to start in the top paragraph, because I don't remember exactly where we left off. Are there any questions before I begin? In the Hebrew language, the historical bearer of the code, the term used to define this reception is simply the Hebrew word for reception. This is Kabbalah. All too much public information is disseminated under the name of Kabbalah. The mass majority of it is absolute rubbish, garbage, and trash, having nothing to do with the authentic, deeper knowledge of the Torah. Of course, the disseminators of these informational systems will argue and fight, saying they have the true Kabbalah and that all contradicting them is false. We have heard such arguments about the true interpretations of Torah for thousands of years. There is nothing new under the sun with the modern claims. The code remains safe. The true Kabbalah remains well concealed out in the open, trampled upon, and ignored by almost everyone. Everyone seeks the depths of unraveling the code, using the best of their intellectual faculties. Yet the code will always defy intellect. The key to the code is simplicity.
Simplicity has joined.
Is a function beyond intellect, involving a realm which today we can psychologically call spirit. We can psychologically call spirit. This is a dimension of mind that the intellectual cannot grasp, for it is the opposite of intellect. The psychologically mature mind is the spiritual mind. The spiritual mind will be one that can embrace both simplicity and complexity. And I will add a comment that it will embrace simplicity and complexity simultaneously. In doing so, the mature mind experiences the ability to embrace and integrate opposites. This is a necessary ability for one who wishes to venture into the concealed truths of the universe. Everything in reality is not as it appears to the physical eye. Science is quickly becoming acutely aware of this. Not everything in the universe can be grasped and understood within the limitation of our present outlook and intellectual approach. Being able to accept contradictions and to go with the flow becomes of paramount importance. To one who wishes to evolve, understand the universe, and to embrace heaven. What this paragraph is discussing is paradox. In mathematics, paradox is very simple to grasp. Paradox is an equation that has multiple answers. And when these multiple answers are put on a graph, you see a line that, or a curved line that goes from one point to another point, and then jumps to a higher point and continues on. But there's a space where the line stops, where the line doesn't equate in that equation. That's a paradox. It's easy to, simple to understand. We don't know why that is, but it doesn't work mathematically, and so the line stops and starts, and there's a space between them. But when it comes to other subjects, we have paradoxes all the time, but we don't reconcile the paradox. We don't understand the paradoxes. In Kabbalah, the first paradox is called Tzimtzum. How can Hashem withdraw within himself? A human body cannot withdraw within itself. It can be cut open, but it cannot withdraw within itself. It's a paradox. How do you understand, how do you reconcile the paradox? It's simple and it's complex simultaneously. I'm continuing on page 15. The original givers of the Torah knew well this matter. Extraterrestrial as they are also extra-dimensional beings. In our mythologies, we have come to call them by all kinds of religious names, most common being angels. Yet these entities are far from being sweet, kind, and loving. We could also call them demons, is my addition. We can call them demons. What is the difference between an angel and a demon? The answer is, there is no difference. They're both spiritual entities with a task, something to perform, a work of serving their overlord, for lack of a better word. I don't want to say God, because that God has no meaning. But they serve an overlord. They follow his instructions exactly. There's no free choice. They are essentially the same beings, but we've applied two different names to them. Is that our problem, our fault, our confusion? That's a question that we will have to answer as we read further, not just in the introduction of this book. Continuing to read, as we said, they are not sweet, kind, and loving. Yet they have a connection to us, in it that it is their role in the universe to look after us and to assist us in our evolution so that we can one day join them and fulfill our universal destiny. we will become what the human species can become. What is its potential? What is our potential as humans? That's what this verse is hinting at. The Torah therefore reflects humanity well. It has its surface and it has its depths. Just as no human today has ever reached the depths of one's own unconscious mind, so too has no one ever reached the depths of Torah. One depends upon the other. About 200 years ago, maybe 250 years, a science called psychology was beginning to be developed. It is basically the study of behavior. And in that science and in that study was developed this perception that there is a brain, which is a physical organ in the body. And there is a mind. And the mind has two components. One that we are aware of on a conscious level, and one where we are not aware of it. And we call that of the unconscious level. When one receives an amazing revelation about themselves, it is said that their unconscious, the unconscious part of themselves that is represented by that revelation, that unconscious revelation, that unconscious part of ourselves, has now become part of our conscious. We are now aware of an additional motivation that we were not aware of before. That is what the process of growth, spiritual growth, represents. Revealing all of our unconscious to become conscious. If it becomes conscious, we now understand our motivations in a deeper level. That's what this paragraph is referring to. That's what spiritual growth actually means. The Torah therefore reflects humanity well. We read this paragraph, continuing the paragraph below it. The greater we allow ourselves to evolve psychologically, the more windows of Torah can be opened to us. The keepers of the keys are faithful in their duties. When we do our share, they will do theirs. Yet it is each individual that must make the proper moves and not wait for the whole of society. When the individual is ready and makes the appropriate moves to evolve and mature, they will be met in like kind, and thus the process of evolution continues. Change has two ways of understanding it, two words that we apply to it. One change is revolution. The other change is evolution. What is the difference? The difference between the letter resh or ro or r and the difference between the letter e. Evolution is a step-by-step process. It's slow. Sometimes we might skip a step, but it's still called evolution and not revolution. Revolution is major change. It's not step by step. We jump from one end of the mathematical line on that graph that I described earlier to the next point, skipping all of that empty space that's represented by why the mathematical formula does not work. Revolution can be destructive. Revolution can be much more difficult than evolution. Process is designed to be evolutionary, while revolutionary is an aspect of evolution. But it does not have to be. It leaves many people behind when we become revolutionary. Continuing to read. I have now revealed to you much about the proper workings of human psychological evolution, the origins of Torah, the nature of its code, and the true meaning of Kabbalah. Now you must decide what you wish to do with this information. I will continue to provide for all of my readers the instructions necessary to embrace both complexity and simplicity. Yet I warn you, as a student of Torah, I write following its format. My written words also have levels of meaning. What I say on the surface conceals that which I mean beneath it. Learn well what I write, and you too will be able to see the simplicity within the complexity, and by doing so, be led to unlocking the secret code.
Has joined.
This is Kabbalah, and I will endeavor to be a teacher to all those who are willing to learn properly, to mature and to grow psychologically, to embrace simplicity. Silence now your mind and still your heart. Return to the place of unity and experience there the reality of the One. This is last paragraph is not just words. At this point, we won't do it in this class, but at this point, we need to utilize a contemplative tool, whether you call it meditation or something else. You need to settle into yourself before you go on past this introduction. We, of course, will just continue reading. But we need to understand this difference. Part one, the long journey home. This part one will have Kabbalistic revelations about Adam and Eden. The two trees are dual universes. The true nature of Torah. The purpose for the obligation to meditatively bond with Hashem, and the secret of prophetic psychic spiritual ascent. Divakut, translation is, can be bonding, can be cleaving. Devikut with Hashem is one of the 613 mitzvot. One must be bonded, must have Devikut with Hashem continually. What does that mean? I woke up this morning And I said, Mode Ani. In that moment of saying Mode Ani, I bonded with Hashem. My consciousness was in tune with the concept of Yud Hey Vav Hey. And then I got up and the phone rang. And I picked up the phone and I said, hello. And I was no longer cleaving Devakut with Hashem. I had fallen. I was no longer in that same bond. But then I started to say the 18 morning blessings. And I reconnected to that bond. But then I ate something. And as I ate that something, yes, I said a blessing on it. But as I started to chew it, my thoughts were not on God. Continually having devakut is a very unusual event in any human's life. Can you do it? Can I chew my food and still be bonded with God? The answer is yes. But I have to know why I'm chewing my food. I cannot do it as a robot. And we all chew food as a robot. We have other thoughts while we're multitasking, feeding the body, giving the body energy potential, which is what food is. There is no greater attribute than devakut, for all things are included in it. The difficulty in achieving devakut is in direct proportion to its level of importance. One who readies himself below is made ready by above. Until such a time when one will receive a spirit from above that will purify and sanctify him, one is obligated, in accordance to one's ability, to make all efforts to properly observe this mitzvah at all times. This is coming a verse or a direction, a teaching from Pele Yoetz, number 4. The words of the Baal Shem Tov. I ask the Mashiach, when will he come? When will he choose to come? He answered me, by this shall you know, at the time when the masses are able to recite Yehudim, meditative unifications, a process of devakut, and ascend above as you do, then shall the klipot, the powers of evil, be nullified. Then shall it be a good time for salvation. This is a teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. Lesson 1. The greatest pursuit anyone can be involved with these days is the active development of one's ability to tune in to higher, deeper spiritual, psychic awareness. This is actually a biblical mitzvah, and it's called devakut. The philosophical pursuits of many other schools in the religious world have blinded their eyes from seeing what is real. They see the theory, but they do not see, and thus cannot perform the practice. This is why we are experiencing such a spike in extremism of all types. Because the religious do not know the way to connect with Hashem and spirit in truth. They try all so many avenues of expression, one more ridiculous and extreme than the last, but none accomplish the desired goal. What is the goal? The goal of connection with heaven. So many try to become heavenly minded that they end up becoming no earthly good. Genesis states that Hashem, Elohim, created the heavens and the earth. Elohim in Hebrew is equal in numerical value and thus in significance to the Hebrew word for nature, Hateva. In simple terms, God is found in what is natural and normal. We lose contact with Hashem every time we allow ourselves to get distracted with our continual eating of the forbidden fruit from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. Let us digress to discuss this point. Before we go on and continue the reading, let's contemplate. Elohim is found in what is natural and normal. What does that mean? It is natural and normal for me to breathe. Sometimes I breathe 10 breaths a minute. Sometimes I breathe 100 breaths a minute. Don't pay any attention to the specific numbers. Understand the concept. It's normal for me to breathe, but there's changing in the way I breathe by this frequency, how fast I breathe, how slow I breathe. But that's nature. But that kind of nature, I need to contemplate because there's a lesson for me about my life, my tikkun, my goal in those breaths, in that process of taking breaths. This is what it means finding God in nature. There's a rock outside my window. Is Elohim in the rock? The answer is yes. Do I want to cleave to that Elohim? As if there's more than one? The answer is there is not more than one. So if I want to cleave to anyone, I'm cleaving to all. But I don't sense that. Because my body limits the soul, the spiritual aspect of myself, from being everywhere at once. Continuing to read. We're on page 19. The bottom paragraph. As we know, in the beginning, Chava and Adam ate of the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden. This story and everything attached to it has for millennium been viewed as being somewhat literal. Any such reading of this and similar biblical stories is a terrible injustice. Fables and stories are appropriate for children and also those adults who never mature, thus shalom, beyond thinking like children. Yet for those who seek to discover truth and reality, like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says in the Zohar, we have to peel away the surface level layers in order to get to the truly nutritional fruit underneath the husk or the shell. We know from Kabbalistic teachings that in the beginning, Adam and Chava existed in bodies of light, not ones of flesh and blood. Therefore, they had no physical mouths with which to eat, and no physical stomachs with which to digest, and no physical backside in which to defecate. Adam and Chava, before the sin, did not resemble human beings after the sin. The Garden of Eden in which Adam and Chava were in originally also was no actual physical place here on the earth. Rather, it was a domain situated in a dimensional reality completely different from our own. Torah teaches about an Eden that is in the inner earth, but this is the lower Eden. The Eden that Adam and Chava were in originally was a higher, more ethereal counterpart to its inner earth, twin. The two overlap one another as parallel dimensions. Originally, the dual dimensions merged. This unity was lost when Adam and Chava ate the forbidden fruit. The two trees in the garden were also not trees of the kind that we know. Therefore, the fruit of the trees was not an apple, not a fig, not a date, not a grape, not any fruit we know of. Any reference to these by our sages is purely metaphorical, with the intent of teaching moral, which is Musar, lessons in similar fashion as did Aesop in ancient Greece by teaching his fables, the Aesop fables. He taught Midrash and Agadah are not history lessons. They are moral lessons. Historicity is therefore irrelevant, with all respect to Rabbi Bar Sadak. History is not irrelevant. History is a location where we can find Elohim hiding, concealing himself. And we need to search through history to reveal Elohim, to reveal Hashem. When one begins with the words, once upon a time, One is trying to get across a point, not the factual rendition of historical events. Therefore, when our sages spoke about Eden and the like to the masses, they spoke within a context that the uneducated masses would understand. Our sages spoke with childlike simplicity to those who had minds of childlike simplicity. Those who are more educated realize this and see through the fable-like language and peer through the real essence of the story. The Torah story relates how Adam and Eve were brought to Eden with the purpose of providing for it, to care for it. Eden itself is a reference to that dimensional plane that immediately oversees and provides sustenance to our own. Our physical universe is subject to this higher parallel dimensional plane. This higher universe is the source of all things here, both material and energetic. And we need to truly understand that the energetic and the material are one and the same, just as the higher level is one and the same as our physical world. Even modern science now postulates that before the Big Bang, which gave rise to our universe, the place of our universe existed as empty space. At some point, this other parallel dimension bumped into our dimension and unleashed into it everything that would eventually become existence as we know it. The point of this bump was bang.
Has joined.
What was unleashed into our then empty universe was energy, which later concealed into form and physical matter. This other parallel universe has been known to the masters of Torah since the beginning. Notice Rabbi Bar Sadak did not say the beginning of time, because he is referring to a point beyond time. We have had visitations and encounters with the entities of that domain since the beginning. In our myths, we call them angels. What they call themselves is a matter best left for another discussion. The Garden of Eden existed as a vortex point of union between these two parallel universes, these two parallel dimensions. Adam and Eve emanated from that other dimension. And their job was to ensure a proper balance and alignment between the two dimensions. As we know, the relationship between the two dimensions is unstable, and it requires humankind to keep it connected and stable so that the flow from one to the other is constant, equal, and generally just flows. This is what the Torah means when it says that Adam's job was to take care of the garden. So as the story goes, Adam comes into the garden and the serpent is already there. The serpent is clearly somewhat humanoid in that he stood erect, spoke, and clearly had higher intelligence. There is so much that we can extrapolate from this in light of modern urban myth, but that would distract us from our topic. In this garden, this vortex point of meeting between two parallel dimensional worlds, there are two metaphorical trees. One is called the tree of life. The other should be called the tree of death. But it is not called that. Rather, it is called the tree of knowledge, good and evil. If one were to eat of its fruit unprepared, it would bring death. But the tree itself is not a tree of death. This is because its fruits in and of themselves are not poisonous. Eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge only becomes a poison if one does not first eat of the fruit of the tree of life. Adam and Chava were commanded not to eat of the tree of knowledge, but they were never forbidden to have eaten from the tree of life. If Adam and Chava were to have eaten from the tree of life first, then they would have lived forever. In other words, they would have properly anchored themselves to the source of life that the higher dimensional plane brings into this one. With such an anchoring, they could have eaten of the tree of knowledge, and it would have only been good for them. However, they were confused by the serpent, which is the Nachash. In Hebrew, it's the same numerical value as the word Mashiach. 358. And deceived into rearranging the proper order. Therefore, instead of eating first from the tree of life, they instead ate from the tree of knowledge. The rest of the story we all know. Well, let me explain what really happened and what that story really means. That's the end of lesson one. We have a few more minutes, but perhaps we can have questions because we would not have time to finish lesson two. So I'm going to stop here. And hopefully you'll have some questions to begin the discussion. Understanding the two dimensions, understanding the two trees, it's paramount. First off, the tree of knowledge is also the same as the tree of life. If you'll remember the verses in the Torah, it says that God put the tree in the middle of the garden. That's very fine, but how do you have two trees in the middle of something? The word middle is very exact. It's a measurement. So how can you have two trees in the middle? You cannot. So the trees are the... Hold on one second. You have cash? Get the cash? And then you put it...
The cash on the car. Don't worry about it right now.
I'll get it to you tomorrow. Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry for the aggravation. Understand. I'm back. So I was saying, the two trees are really one tree because it's the only way they can be in the middle of the garden. So what is the difference between the trees? Read the description. The tree of knowledge is a cycle. It goes up and down. It's good and then it's evil and then it's good again. The tree of life is just step by step growing upward, becoming more. The tree of life has no down to it. What does that mean for the coming of Mashiach? It means that there will never be a mistake. There will never be a divorce. There will never be a business decline. There will never be a business cycle. There will never be someone who's hungry. There will never be someone who has no house, no place to sleep. There will never be someone who desires something that they don't have, that someone else has. The meaning of the center, the middle of the garden, is significant. But the people, remember, as children, we don't think like this. We don't question it. We don't understand good and evil. The tree of knowledge, good and evil. And as Rabbi Bar Sadok explained when we were reading, what does it say? It says the tree of life. It didn't tell him not to eat from the tree of life. It just says after he eats from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, he should not eat from the tree of life yet. So the Midrashim and the sages come and they say, okay, the tree of life was supposed to have been eaten first, and then the tree of knowledge, good and evil, would not be evil. It would be understood to be what it truly was meant to be, an expansion of the tree of life. But because we ate the tree of knowledge first, the Torah comes and says, wait a second, we cannot eat the tree of life again. We have to wait. We have to be able to digest that fruit of the tree of knowledge, good and evil. What is that digestion? Remember, Adam and Chava did not have a stomach. What is that digestion? The digestion is being able to perceive what we now call evil as good. To recognize that everything comes from Hashem, from the phrase Ein Od Milvado. There is nothing but Hashem. And therefore, whatever happens is good, because Hashem is good. Hashem's process is good. Hashem cannot provide anything that is not good. But I'm in pain. I'm suffering. This is not from Hashem. This is what I need to understand. This is what I need to digest. Are there any questions?
I guess from the beginning of this study, we talked about evolution and revolution. And I see that pertains to me, it pertains to how the system works. Slow, evolution, slow, growth, revolution is that you're just thrown into it immediately. And then it causes you to have pain and suffering. Because you don't, you're left behind with the good, from the goodness, because you can't comprehend. You can't comprehend it from a revolution standpoint because it's so fast and so speedy. And the other thing is, talk about the Garden of Eden, the middle. I see our human body as middle. It'd be our digestive system, if you say it's stomach area. And what you take in affects your whole system. It'd be good if you take in good. It's good. Your body is at peace. And if you go against God's will, then your body suffers. I guess my question would be, Adam and Eve, Hava and Adam, they're eating from the tree of knowledge. With that, did they, they were curious about it. And I go back to the sexual intercourse that they had before they were supposed to, before the Sabbath. And I consider that as a wisdom, and that they could have approached it slowly and wait for the goodness to come into the day. And they didn't. They were curious. And, of course, they were tempted. So that was kind of my take from this lesson. Maybe totally wrong.
Why do you think they were wrong?
Well, I said I may be totally wrong.
And again, why do you think you would be totally wrong?
I think this is a new teaching for me, you know, when we talk about the two trees, but really we're talking about the two sides of the tree, a tree.
No, we're talking about 10 sides of the tree.
Well, 10 sides of the tree, yes, I get that. So, I guess... I guess more studies will reveal to me if I'm on the right track or not. Or I've fallen off the track.
Malka, is that your question? Are you on the right track?
Yes.
And that is a question that has to be answered by you individually.
Okay.
All I can say is when I started to study Kabbalah, I had a teacher who explained it this way. He was a contractor. He's building a building. He needs to have a set of plans. Without the set of plans, he cannot really be effective, and he's wasteful in his efforts to build the building. With the plans, he can manage a multiplicity of contractors. He can manage the electrical contractor, the plumbing contractor, the wallboard contractor, the landscape contractor. When it comes to different souls, meaning groups of people who are in the same desire to receive, and we call that a nation, and there are 70 nations. Each nation is like one of those smaller contractors. There's a nation that's the electrical contractor. There's a nation that is the wallboard contractor. There's a nation that is the landscape contractor. There's a nation that is the plumbing contractor, and so on. But there is only one nation that is the general contractor, who has the responsibility of coordinating all of the other nations, all of the other contractors. And for the soul that we describe as a child of Israel, that soul needs to be the general contractor. That soul needs to follow the path of the Kabbalah in order to achieve the most that it can achieve. But that's process, what I just described metaphorically, you have to decide for yourself, is this the right path for you? And then within the path of Kabbalah, is this the right teacher for you? And within each stage of your growth, you'll have to identify that and say, yes, this is the right one for me. Or no, it's not, but I haven't found the right one yet. But how do I go look for the right one? And this is where your trust in Hashem comes in. Because if it's the wrong one for you, he will bring the right one to you. As the adage says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. There is no one right path in Kabbalah. For every soul to learn, there are 32 paths of wisdom. There are 50 gates of understanding. These are the same thing. They're gates, they're paths. These are metaphors for what they are. And for millennia, various religions had not read 32 paths and 50 gates as different things. They've read it as different things. They've read it literally. When the sage wrote 32 paths, the image that they received in their mind was exactly that, a maze consisting of 32 outlets, 32 gates, or 50 gates. But they're both the same thing. It's the doorway. The path is the doorway. The gate is a doorway. What is right for you is only right for you. It isn't necessarily right for the person next to you. They have their own path. That's why the Sefer Yetzirah uses the word Netiv, which is not a halakha. Sages have explained the halakha means a public pathway. On a public pathway, we're all walking to the same goal. On a Netiv, it's an individual path. There may be more than one, but it's not more than a lot. You know, we don't have millions of people on this path. It's just those who are willing to stop being a child and reading things literally, knowing that every word, every phrase, every verse is a metaphor. How do I understand that metaphor? And knowing that I am constantly being inundated with the perception that the metaphor and the simple story are the same. So if I understand the simple story, I'm understanding the metaphor. No, you have to understand the metaphor. Then you can understand the simple story. That's what the Ra, his name is Rabbi Eliyahu from from, it'll come to me. The Gaon de Vilna. That's essentially what he says. You cannot understand the simple story unless you understand the metaphor first. You cannot eat from the tree of life. Excuse me, cannot eat from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, unless you eat from the tree of life first. These are all metaphors saying the same thing, but we don't see it that way. We see them separated and different. One from the other is something different. And we have to find a way to cleave to Hashem. We have to find a way to perceive Hashem in history. We have to find a way to see the unity of all things so that we truly know the meaning of Ein Od Milvado. There is nothing else but Hashem. So I hope I haven't confused you with the answer.
What, how you say you everyone describes two trees, yet you say it's one tree. How do you identify which part of the tree is good and evil, which part of the tree is tree of life? How do you identify that?
When you correct your emotions, you rise above the intellect. You unify the two parts. There is not two parts, there's only one part. There's only one tree in the center of the garden.
There's one tree, and you speak of two trees, of which you say not to eat one tree or one part of that tree. Which part are we referring to? What does it look like? Is there a difference?
Is there a difference between the tree of life and the tree of knowledge, good and evil?
Yes, I mean, in the garden, you can see a difference in different trees, either in the stem of it or leaf structure.
The statement made by Rabbi Bar Sadak is that, I'm trying to remember what he said exactly. He essentially said there is no difference between the trees. When you eat from the tree, it's how you perceive the result. Do you receive it as good, or do you perceive it as evil? If it's you're perceiving it as at good, and it's never going to change, it's just going to continue to get better, then you're in the tree of life. The study of Torah leads you to that place. The study of Torah helps you to digest what you ate before, which was the tree of knowledge, good and evil. The study of Torah brings you to that place where you see both trees as one, because you have now have digested the tree of knowledge fruit. And once you've digested the tree of knowledge fruit, you can now eat from the tree of life.
I'm referring to how do you know the difference between the two trees or the one tree but the two parts of it? How do you know if you want to just eat from the tree of life? How would you identify that part of the tree and not by mistake eat from the tree of good and evil?
The simple answer to this question is the tree of life is always good, so everything that happens to you is good. Then you're eating from the tree of life.
Okay. that still somehow eludes me. If you don't want to get involved with the tree of good and evil, how can you avoid it if it's in the same tree?
Just you choose to see whatever happens to you as good. That's how you know it's the tree of life and you're not involved with the tree of death, the tree of knowledge, good and evil. It's all in your perception. It's all in your consciousness. We have this famous sage, Gamzu Litova, and this is also good. That's the path to see the tree of life and not be involved with the tree of knowledge. And this is also for good. Any other questions? Shalom Gadol to everyone. Have a beautiful evening, afternoon. We will have three more classes. There's a class at 1 o'clock West Coast time. Preparation for the Passover Seder. Preparation for Pesach. 4:30 is our Deep Zohar class. And 7 p.m. is a class with the writings of the Ari. Shalom Gadol to everyone. Have a beautiful afternoon.
Shalom Gadol.
Shalom Gadol. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Shalom Gadol.
Shalom.